Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And in fact, you can stream online with us live for people outside of our listening area. That is a great opportunity. And again, that's at wdiy.org. And podcast of prior shows are also available there. Under local programming, just scroll down for Your Financial Choices and peruse the topics that we've covered over the past several years, in fact, I think. Today is December 5th, 2018. The markets were closed today as part of a national day of mourning for the loss of President George H.W. Bush. But as of Tuesday, they had traded lower, with the Dow closing at 25,027, the NASDAQ at 7,158, and the S&P at 2,700. Our topic tonight is the year in review and what's ahead for markets. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we will do our best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And to discuss this great topic of the year in review and what's ahead for markets, I'm joined by two guests, Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. Tim Roof is a CFP professional, financial advisor, and vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. Tim assists clients with comprehensive financial planning, including retirement plans, investment management, risk management, and tax planning and preparation. He believes that working with individuals and families on long-term planning and navigating financial options requires a relationship based on mutual respect and understanding. He also serves as a member of the Valley National Investment Committee, providing experienced, in-depth financial analysis to determine appropriate investment opportunities for clients. And Connor Darrell. Connor Darrell is an assistant vice president and head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. Connor leads the firm's investment committee and research efforts. It's also his job to provide investment analysis and assist Valley National advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation. In his role, he meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. Connor is also a CFA charter holder. Welcome to the show, Connor and Tim. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Always fun.
Yeah, you guys did a great job, and we thought we're going to have to make this a recurring topic. I think it's good to kind of get perspective of what's going on, especially from, you know, people who are right here in the Valley and local, and help explain it in terms that people can understand. You know, sometimes people will turn on CNBC or turn on Bloomberg, and they don't always get all the jargon that they talk about. So hopefully we'll be able to clarify some of that tonight, but also kind of give some perspective on what's going on. So we're going to be reviewing what's been a very interesting year for global markets and discussing the outlook for 2019. And I think the best place to start might be a quick review of recent developments, because there's been a lot going on since we last had the two of you on the show. And we've seen some relatively large swings in the equity market recently. So after, I guess, you say hello, I just wanted to jump right in because there's so much to talk about. You know, what's been behind all this volatility, and how should investors be thinking about the current environment?
Yeah, so I think a quick way to summarize what the market's going through right now is kind of a process of beginning to moderate expectations for what we can have moving forward. Coming into 2018, there was a ton of enthusiasm. We were coming off one of the strongest years in global equity market history. The economy was humming along and about to get a further jolt from the recent passage of U.S. tax reform. So there was a lot of aura of enthusiasm and optimism going into that year or going into this year. And, you know, there's a popular graphic that a lot of market practitioners use to kind of summarize the way that the market's psychology evolves over the course of an economic cycle. It's called the market cycle of emotions. And at the peak of the cycle is the term euphoria. And I think that's actually a decent way of describing some of the feelings we had around the markets earlier this year. And that's not to say that there isn't any reason to, or that there's a reason that we'd expect a pullback or that we should temper or be fearful. But I think it's unlikely we've met the peak yet, but, you know, we are going through a period of consolidation. And, you know, I think that we need to kind of begin to temper our expectations for what the long-term return profile looks like.
Well, I think, too, that, as you said, this euphoria comes off of what people get used to over time, right? We've seen the bull market for 10 years. People just started getting used to this, and it just kept getting better and better and better. So it's kind of just human nature to kind of get used to things, whether it's the temperatures in the summer and then we're surprised when we have a cold night, the temperatures in the fall and then we get Indian summer. So people have to kind of, set those expectations. So you're saying to have moderate expectations going forward.
Yes, I think that's what the market is kind of going through that process now of evaluating. There's a lot more out there right now in terms of uncertainty. We're starting to see some of the conventional economic warning signs are starting to flash. The global economy is slowing down a tiny bit, excluding the U.S. The U.S. still looks pretty strong, but I think there's an expectation that the U.S. will begin to slow down to a more conventional kind of trend-like pace. But just kind of to put things into perspective, you know, we kind of crammed 3 years worth of equity market gains into 12 months in 2017. And we're kind of in a process of taking a step back and reevaluating the long-term expectations. Markets are forward-looking entities, and, you know, they often, it gets lost in the shuffle, but they tend to look or care more about the relative change in the expectations moving forward than they do about the strength of the economy or what's going on at any given point in time. It's more about what they expect to be evolving moving forward.
And you can almost argue 2017 was the unusual year because normally there is volatility throughout a given stock market year. And last year, the largest drawdown was only 3%. And that's quite unusual because normally we see drawdowns of 5% or more at least 2 to 3 times during a calendar year. And we do have corrections, which is what we just went through here recently, once about every 2 times a year historically. So really we're just getting the normal, I would say, volatility back into the marketplace again.
But again, it's because we kind of got accustomed to not having it. So now we're feeling it more.
Sure, because you get kind of numb to what's going on out there in the economy when every day the market's going up. And then suddenly when you do get some volatility, you kind of get shocked.
Okay. So you mentioned signals. People watch signals. So what are some of the signals that may be causing markets to pause?
Now, some of the things that the market has paid close attention to over the last couple months in particular is number one is the yield curve, the future of Fed policy decision making, and that probably is really closely tied to the yield curve and interest rates. Tariffs continue to be a focus for markets. And actually, the Brexit vote and the situation with the UK leaving the European Union has kind of resurfaced as an area of focus for markets.
Okay, Connor, I want you to, we have a break in a minute, so could you quickly just explain what yield curve is, and then when we come back from the break, if you could kind of delve deeper between you and Tim.
Sure, so typically what you you would plot out the different rates that are offered on bonds of differing maturities, and typically in a normal environment, the longer term maturities, the 10 years, 30 years, all have longer or higher interest rates than would a 1 or 2 year bond, because there's a higher level of opportunity for things to arise, uncertainties and risks to arise over a longer period of time. So an investor should generally demand a higher interest rate on the bond in order to compensate for some of that risk they're taking. Later in the cycle, we typically see the difference between the 30 and the 10 or the 10 and the 2 year maturities start to get closer together. And that's if you plot it out on a line, that line starts to get more of a flattening as opposed to a upward slope.
For a point in time. So
yes,
you plot them all out, and that's what they call the yield curve. Okay, folks, we're coming to our first break. If you have questions, we are live here tonight. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are discussing the year in review and what's ahead for markets with Tim Roof, a CFP from Valley National Financial Advisors, and Connor Darrell, a CFA from there as well. And we just talked about some of the signals that people are watching when we're looking at the markets and some of the volatility we're seeing in the markets, what's causing that. And it's kind of this focus that people are having on some of these particular signals that Connor just went over, the yield curve, Fed policies, tariffs, and Brexit. So we talked about the yield curve, and we mentioned that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what is it that's causing such disruption or impact for people's for the market volatility?
Yeah, so I think, as we kind of alluded to before the break, some of the biggest influence on markets recently has been kind of related to interest rates, the yield curve, and the Federal Reserve. And I think those are all really interrelated issues. And the yield curve was a big story this week. On Monday, we talked about the yield curve being upward sloping in typical normal environments, but we actually saw a portion of the curve begin to invert, which basically means that it's a section of it was negatively sloping. So we saw the 3-year Treasury yield is actually now equivalent to or slightly higher than the 5-year Treasury yield. And typically, when the yield curve inverts from a historical standpoint, it's been viewed as a bearish signal for the economy. The bond market tends to do a better job than the equity market of kind of projecting global growth and economic activity moving forward. And so it was kind of a big flashing signal. And this is the first kind of tangible signal that the market has kind of had to digest since the beginning of this bull market. So, there was a negative reaction in the market on Tuesday, and that was really the primary catalyst for that.
Okay, and as we go through the show, we're going to kind of revisit that and what that means. But first, we're just going to talk about the signals. So we just talked about the yield curve. What about the Fed policies, Tim?
So the Fed now is currently going through what many call the Fed normalization process, where we've had many years of interest rates near zero to help drive business investment and help drive growth. And now that growth is healthier, the Fed needs to manage inflation expectations moving forward by increasing the federal funds rate, which basically is a trigger or a gauge for how lending will occur in the market, such as mortgages or home equities, personal loans, so on and so forth. So the higher the federal funds rate gets, obviously that can have some effect on growth and also can help manage inflation expectations moving forward. So the market was really trying to get a gauge on what the Fed's expectations were. And in October, they came out and said that they were still far away from their long-term federal funds rate. And the market was starting to see some softening in growth moving forward. Right now, we're at a pace possibly above 3% on gross domestic product this year, which is going to be the fastest pace of growth since the 2008 recession. But we're starting to see the growth expectations to start to trend back down towards 2% long run moving forward. So the market saw that as a concern that the Fed might be getting ahead of itself. And now recently here last week, the federal chairman Jerome Powell came out to say that they are very close now to their long-term federal funds rate. So we may see a one more quarter of a percentage point rate hike in December, and possibly the Fed may pause from there and just monitor inflation data as it comes in.
Okay. And they are more involved than they used to be like decades ago, right, as far as watching that and kind of paying attention to inflation and things like that. So the economy has come to expect that as well, which makes you wonder if that's why there's this reaction with these minimal raising of the rates, too. There's this big reaction because we think they're going to carry that on forever, I think, sometimes it seems.
Well, sure, the Fed is in the position of managing growth and inflation expectations moving forward. And if they raise rates too quickly, that could constrain growth moving forward and shorten the economic cycle. And if they wait too long to raise rates, then you get overheating and higher inflation for an extended period of time.
Okay. Boy, that's a lot to remember. Let's talk about tariffs for a minute. Tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. That's about, you know, all you hear tweeted about or read about. What do we have going on there?
So tariffs have been a major concern this year. And the concern is obviously tariffs are really never good for growth and never good for business, because when you have tariffs, you end up paying more for a product. And when you pay more for a product, someone has to pay that price, and normally it's the consumer that needs to pay the price of the tariff. So now, recently, what happened at the G20 meeting, there's been some talk that obviously we're going to be on hold for further tariffs. The original plan was to change the tariffs from 10 to 25%, but we will now hold off on further tariff increases for the next 90 days in order to discuss and negotiate with China, as that there may be some negotiations now moving forward.
And would they be, do you think that they'd be able to come to some consensus within 90 days, though? I thought I had heard that 90 days is a pretty short window. So maybe they would not go from 10 to 25, but maybe kind of do something in between.
It's possible. It's really hard to say. I mean, the trade agreements that are in place now are very complicated and could take some time to work themselves through. The idea, or the conventional wisdom right now that's coming out of the White House, is that China's going to allow agriculture, energy, and industrial goods into their country, and also reduce the 40% auto tariff on imports as well. So we'll see where that goes. Nothing is in writing yet, so it's something to monitor as we move
forward.
But
at least they're talking about it, and so people like that, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what about Brexit? That's another thing that's out there.
Yeah. So this is something that kind of surfaced briefly in 2016. It was, you know, I think it was June in 2016 when the UK formally voted for the referendum to actually begin the process of leaving the European Union. And the markets did not like that when that vote went through. It was a surprise vote. It was against kind of expectations were that they were going to vote that down, and they did not. And the market sold off pretty considerably for about 2 days and then quickly rebounded, and everyone kind of forgot about it. And now we are finally 2 years later at the point where there is a deadline in March when the UK will actually be formally removed from the European Union, and they have to put together a deal and kind of figure some things out to dot their I's and cross their T's to figure out exactly what that might look like. And there is a deal on the table that will be moving to British Parliament next week, and I think the vote is on December 11th. And the expectation is actually that that deal may get voted down. So there's just a lot of uncertainty with regard to what a Brexit situation might look like next year. But the general consensus in the markets is that if they're unable to come to a formal deal that is agreed upon by all parties, that things could get a little bit messy. And there could be some significant interruptions to economic growth in the region and to kind of the way that businesses are sourcing new capital and projects. So I think that in general has just created a new sense of uncertainty on top of the fact that we're also seeing growth in and of itself kind of moderating a bit, and there's just kind of piling on the list of little concerns there are out there. I think the general consensus is that the economic consequences are impactful enough that they will probably ultimately reach a conclusion and reach a deal, and things will ultimately kind of be smoothed over, but there's definitely that kind of sense of uncertainty right now.
Well, and maybe it'll just be for a couple days. Sorry, going back to the 2016 thing. Yeah. I know, I remember that, you know, chaos, the sky is falling, and then people forget. Okay, we're off to our next break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices. And I have in the studio with me Connor Darrell, CFA, and Timothy Roof, CFP professional from Valley National Financial Advisors. And we are talking about the year in review and what's ahead for markets. And we're kind of trying to give an overview. So we talked a little bit about some of the signals that might be causing the markets to pause a little bit, gave a little summary on that. And at the same time, we don't want everyone to be fearful, and there are still reasons to be optimistic. So Connor and Tim, if maybe you could talk for a few minutes about what there is to be optimistic about. What are some of the things that you see that lead you to believe that this is market's not quite over?
So we talked a lot about the Fed rate hike cycle and rising interest rates, but to put things in perspective, the current federal funds rate at 2 to 2.25 is still very low, historically speaking, and still favorable from an economic standpoint and equity market standpoint. So that still remains intact. Also, although we're starting to see some slowing growth from its peaks in the third quarter here of 2018, we still expect growth to run at the pace of about 2% moving forward, which is what we've basically averaged since the 2008 recession. And on top of that, we're expecting FactSet collects a lot of data in regards to earnings growth for corporations that are on the domestic stock exchange. And the expectations is still about 8-9% earnings growth for 2019. So it still remains a favorable economic growth backdrop for the economy and the stock market in general.
Can I throw another question in there? Because you mentioned the low Fed funds rate. We mentioned that, you know, that was to help the low rates. We went from zero, you know, on up, was to help spur growth, et cetera. You hear about companies having all this cash on their balance sheet. You hear about companies buying back their stock. Do they need the incentive? And one, do they need the lower rates as incentive to invest if they've got all this cash on their banks? Maybe that's what the Fed's thinking. Hey, companies are in good position. So that makes me wonder. And if they do still have all this cash on their bank, on their balance sheets, can't they continue to invest in their own companies? Are we not factoring that in when we're looking at potential growth in the markets? I mean, is that a valid question that I'm asking?
No, I think it is a good question. I think that the quick answer is that based on what the Fed is beginning to do, now we probably don't need to have rates at zero, and that's why the Fed has started to move. But I think to put that kind of in context, when we initially moved the rates down to zero, we really did need it. And a lot of that is not only just for the big corporations, it's for the Main Street, small businesses. Yeah. Those are the kinds of decisions that can, higher interest rates can really kind of strangle off small business growth, which is really the major part of economic growth in this country still. I mean, the vast majority of people are employed by smaller companies, not the Fortune 500s.
Good point. I like that. Thank you, Connor. So other things to be optimistic, the Fed rates, what else?
So I think to kind of build on that, though, and we talked about the yield curve inversion, I just want to kind of touch upon that again. I think it's probably important to kind of look at that in a historical context. And while it is true that every recession in recent history has been preceded by an inversion of some section of the curve, it's also true that it's not necessarily something that happens immediately. And there's a lot of reason for us to kind of think that moving forward, we still have an opportunity to kind of climb forward in equity markets. We actually were kind of just pulling some data today, and we reviewed multiple instances where a section of the yield curve inverted, and then the S&P 500 produced a double-digit return over the following 12 months. So, and this is not something that necessarily foretells doom immediately. It's just a situation where it's one signal that has historically kind of said, you know, hey, this is something, there's something going on you want to be aware of.
Okay, so when you're watching CNBC, are they talking about the doom story? Or are they talking about, hey, you know what, we've seen this happen before and it doesn't mean doom every single time? Do they talk about those? You know, you were looking at the data. You said it doesn't always happen. Sometimes there was double-digit growth in the next 12 months after that. That one little blip in the signal. So are they talking about that?
They go ahead, Tim.
because you it always seems to be breaking news and oh my gosh.
There's a little bit of both sides, but sometimes, you know, when you have these moments of uncertainty and volatility in the markets, they tend to talk about or focus on the doom scenario more than the positives. And it's really on our part and everyone else's part to kind of navigate through the noise, so to speak, to find out what's really going on behind the scenes versus what's in the news headlines.
Okay, so that's why we have you guys come on the show to talk about some of these things, to kind of remind people that there's always another side of the story.
Right, and to talk about some of the, you know, positive items or tailwinds that are still out there is the consumer, because ultimately the consumer drives the economy.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. Talk about consumer spending for a minute.
So right now, consumer confidence is very high. I mean, we saw earlier this year, many folks that are employed got increases in their net pay because of the tax law that we now have in place. So that has helped driven growth. Also, the reduction in the corporate tax rate has driven capital expenditures from corporations this year, and that's what we're seeing some growth from as well. And right now, disposable income is at very healthy levels from a historic perspective. So the consumer looks to be in good shape. You know, very low unemployment, adding about 200,000 jobs a month. That paints a pretty rosy picture overall.
So going to employment then. So employment's looking pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with Tim on the consumer confidence thing. That if someone were to come up to me and say, hey, what's the biggest, most promising aspect of the economy right now, I'd point to consumer confidence first and then employment shortly after. Just a little comment that we kind of saw some data recently released by Adobe following Black Friday, and it just kind of, I think it speaks to how confident consumers are, which is great. It's fuel for the economy. Black Friday shopping online was 23.6% higher last year than it was, than it was the prior year. We did see some of that has to do with people kind of shifting their taste. They're not really going out shopping and getting trampled at Walmart anymore. But, you know, 23.6% is a huge increase. And certainly on a absolute basis, if you add together, you know, retail versus plus online shopping, it's been a huge improvement year over year.
And that was all-time online highs, correct, for sales?
Yes.
This year?
Even grandma's shopping online, probably. Yeah. You know what I mean? and so employment. So we, with all of that consumer spending and shopping, there's probably higher employment with that as well.
Yep, the unemployment rate is at the lowest it's been in decades. There are more job openings than there are people looking for jobs, which bodes well for people looking for jobs, as well as for people looking to, you know, go walk into their boss's office and negotiate a higher wage, which all of those things are good for the economy. The other thing I kind of point to, now it looks a little bit more favorable after some of the volatility we've had, is equity market valuations. Right now, the forward price-to-earnings ratio, which is basically just you take the price of the stock and divide it by how much you expect that stock to earn over the next year, is at about 15.3 times right now. So price divided by earnings, 15.3. The average is 15.1. So we're not at a point where valuations look overly stretched by that metric. As a point of comparison, during the tech bubble, we were up in the mid-20s. So,
okay. We're at our next break. Folks, if you have questions, I know it's a very interesting topic tonight, but you're welcome to call in with questions, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 31. On Thursday, sunny with the high near 37. Thursday night, low around 28. Friday, sunny with the high near 35. Friday night, mostly clear with the low around 22. Saturday, sunny with the high near 34. And on your Saturday night, low around 23. Sunday morning, it's going to be mostly sunny with the high near 35. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We are joined in the studio this evening with Connor Darrell, CFA, and Tim Roof, CFP, talking about the year in review and what's ahead for markets and what kind of signals we've been hearing about, paying attention to, and that might be causing some of this volatility in the markets. But at the same time, putting it in perspective and trying to not buy into all the hype, but have a kind of a base for understanding all of what you're hearing about and a set of framework to understand it. So we've talked about some of the things to be optimistic about, you know, the Fed rates, employment, consumer spending. Connor just talked about valuations, that valuations still seem to be pretty close to historical averages. They're not too far out of line. Things aren't too expensive. What about inflation? Because when we mention a full, you know, employment's great, sometimes that has an impact on inflation. So what are we looking at for that?
So inflation was starting to pick up over the summer months. We saw in August, actually, inflation rose at about 2.8%. But now here near term, we started to see inflation trend down closer to 2% again long term, which is really where we've kind of been, between 1.5% to 2% since the 2008 recession. We saw recently a drop in energy prices, oil's come down. And if you go to the pump, you'll see lower gas costs, you know, heating bills are lower right now. With the lower energy costs, we'll probably, you know, likely see inflation stay subdued for the next few months because of that.
So when we saw it kind of inching up a little bit, people were saying it was probably because of the employment. We're almost at full employment. That impacts inflation, drives up wages, that kind of thing. So we saw that inching up, but then it creeped back down, you said. And is it because of those oil prices and gas prices coming down? Is that what made the impact on that inflation? The inflation adjustment?
A portion, but not in total, no.
Okay.
It really, when you look at the pieces of inflation, if you cut out the energy fluctuations, which can be quite volatile over time, the inflation was actually trending at lower than 2% here near term now. So yes, there is some increased wage growth that is causing some inflation, but some of the other pieces of the inflation equation are still at a very sustainable rate at this point in time.
Okay. Anything you have on that?
Yeah, I think just to kind of tie everything together and kind of demonstrate why that why this benign or low inflation is something that we view as relatively favorable is just in general, if you look through history, typically the economy doesn't really roll over until there's some kind of inflationary pressure that begins to take hold, because that's when the economy really starts to heat up. And we just haven't seen that really happen yet. And, you know, there's been a lot of kind of explanations going around, people trying to explain, you know, why has it been such a unique expansion where we haven't seen inflation. I think one of the more interesting ones that I heard someone discussing recently is, you know, it might have to do with the globalization of the economy. If you think about how the economy has become so much more integrated than it was, you know, even 10, 20 years ago, and with the expansion of technology and just how the world is just kind of coming together, it basically creates one much larger economy. And if you, with the U.S. is kind of the only spot right now that's really looking really strong. So you kind of have to have these other areas heating up as well to generate that inflation that might be more tied to a more global phenomenon than it might have been in the past. I thought that was an interesting way of kind of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that impacts prices that we're paying too. And then comes the fear of the tariff, you know, the globalization, I mean, because if the U.S. is competing with China prices or, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, because tariffs would be a protectionist policy. And within that, with tariffs, that's unhealthy inflation because that's not driven by growth. Inflation driven by growth is healthy inflation. But with a tariff, it gets passed through the consumer. And without the additional growth, the consumer has to find some way to bear that increase in cost.
Okay. And not just the consumer, but also the manufacturing and producers here who are using the materials that are imported that are subject to those tariffs.
Right. So it's a two-way street that the corporation and the manufacturer has to find a way to more efficiently produce that product or pass along that cost to the consumer.
I think I was reading an article. It was either Nike or Adidas. I don't recall. It was one of the shoe manufacturers that they go to such lengths to mitigate materials they're using that would be subject to tariffs. How they stitch the shoe, how they stitch the insert in the shoe. I mean, it was just amazing. And I don't recall the article. I don't retain things like that. But I just thought it was quite fascinating that they're having to probably spend money on ways to, you know, work around it. And I thought that was really interesting. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about, you know, looking back and kind of what we've dealt with recently, and that there's things to be optimistic about, as well as, you know, signals to watch and trying to understand what those signals are and putting it in perspective. What about 2019? Do you have any expectations on the volatility that we've experienced over the past, you know, few months? It's been making people a little bit nervous. Should people be doing things different going forward? I mean, we always talk about being disciplined, so...
Right. I think to kind of get started with that, it's kind of what we can expect moving into 2019 is, you know, we said it the last time we were on the show back over the summer, and it's still true. We said it earlier as well. You know, the next 5 years are likely to look a lot different than the last 5 years in terms of what a conventional portfolio will provide in terms of return. And that, you know, that's not necessarily doesn't mean that things are going to be hugely negative. It just doesn't mean the double-digit returns in the equity market that we've kind of gotten used to are not really there anymore. We're kind of getting we're to the end of the there's not a lot of meat left on that bone, so to speak. And the reason behind that is really all those things that we've kind of discussed earlier in the program. Tim mentioned earnings growth still looks good. And it was, what did you, I don't know if you, what is it, 9-something?
8-9%.
8-9%. But if you look at right now, we're at about 25. A big part of that has to do with tax reform, just the year-over-year impact of having lower taxes. When you look at this year versus last year, there's a massive increase from that. That's going to, you know, when we go into 2019, that bonus won't be there anymore because we'll be comparing the same tax regime to another.
That is a
good
point.
Be back in single digits likely, and possibly, you know, we'll see if the consumer can kind of carry the torch. But that's certainly one reason we have, like we said, moderating economic growth. There's more uncertainty out there. Some of the things we talked about with the geopolitics and Brexit and trade and all those issues. And we're just generally getting later in the economic cycle.
Okay. What about volatility?
It's likely volatility is going to be here to stay for some time.
And you said that's normal to expect some volatility too, though, right?
Yeah, it's normal. Like we mentioned earlier, a correction, which is basically when the stock market drops 10% or more from its highs, that happens historically once every 2 years. And pullbacks of 5% or more happen at least 2 to 3 times per year historically as well. So, you know, it's normal to have movements in the market.
Tim, can I ask you a question? So you said it's normal to have a pullback of 5%, 2 to 3 times a year. Are you talking like in a day? Because that's what we had on Monday, 3%, right? I mean,
sometimes it can be. We actually see volatility, I would say, here recently has been a bit more swift than it has been in the past. Where
up and down, though, right?
Yes, yeah. in both sides, definitely, because we've seen on the other side, too, the stock market go up 2-3% or more sometimes in a given day as well. Or even intraday, the market could be down and swing to those wide ranges during the intraday.
So we have to kind of get used to probably a little bit more of that.
Yeah, but just to put kind of where things are now in a context versus, you know, 2008, obviously that was, we were in the midst of the global economic crisis, we were entering recession, there was a lot of fear. But, you know, we had this year so far, there's been 5 moves to the upside or downside of 3% or more. In 2008, there were 42 of those days. So just to kind of compare, you know, while it feels a little bit violent right now out there in the markets, it's nothing like it has been in some of the most turbulent periods in our history.
And you wouldn't necessarily expect that next year, though, because sometimes people, I think I heard people saying this inversion, you know, happened before 2008, and then we had that volatility in 2008.
I just think the world is very different than it was in 2007. I think, and I don't know, maybe Tim, if you agree with me or not, but I think the next recession, if and when, well, not if, it will eventually happen. It'll probably be more of a death by 1,000 paper cuts type of situation as opposed to, you know, a huge crisis that takes, you know, global markets down with it. I think we'll have these kinds of smaller issues that build upon each other and eventually just kind of put us into a mild recession.
Okay,
I think that's the way it'll be very different from
the
previous
one.
I agree with that statement because we don't have the same financial imbalances now that we did back in 2007. There were some very, very major financial imbalances when you looked at consumers and the amount of debt they were bringing on from a mortgage standpoint. Banks were not well capitalized back in 2007. Banks are now well capitalized. Household balance sheets are historically very healthy right now. So, like Connor said, it's likely going to be something that's a bit more of a run-of-the-mill type of bear market than it would be something that would impact the heart and soul of the financial industry like the 2008 financial crisis was.
Yeah, I know kids of those people are very careful with their money because they saw what their parents went through back in the day. And I've heard kids, you know, 31 coming in saying, oh, no, save. No, I'm not going to spend that money. No, I'm not going to have a credit card. I'm surprised. But it's because, well, my parents told me, you know.
It definitely makes an impact when you see that happen to your parents and you experience it firsthand.
Yeah. Very interesting. Should investors be doing anything else? What else should they be doing?
I think the number one thing to really be doing right now, well, first of all, in general, is nothing, not to kind of stay the course, keep a diversified portfolio. But one thing to consider is rebalancing to your long-term targets. If you had held a 60% equity, 40% bond portfolio at the beginning of this bull market back in 2009 and let that run, you'd now be sitting on a portfolio that's about 81% stocks.
Mm.
So that's a situation where you now have 20% more equities in your portfolio. It's more aggressive than it was, and you're also 10 years older, 10 years closer to retirement. And so you have to kind of be cognizant of the fact that your portfolio may no longer align with your kind of goals moving forward. So I think it's a good opportunity given, even after the pullback, if you think about where we are versus where we were at the beginning of 2017, we're about 20% higher. So it's not like all the gains are gone and it's a horrible time to be trying to salvage that. But I think it's an opportune time to really consider, you know, given the fact that we don't expect returns to be as exciting, maybe making sure that you're comfortable with the portfolio you have and that you can weather the type of volatility that it might generate.
Yeah, I think it's a great point to make, especially when you talked about where you were in 2008. And if you set it and forget it and you didn't look at it, where do we see that most often? In people's retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. People sign up, they join at work, and they never look at it again. And the nice thing about rebalancing in your retirement portfolio, if it's a pre-tax investment, not a, you know, something other than that, there's no tax on rebalancing. You don't pay capital gains tax on rebalancing in your retirement account. So that is a great opportunity to do that. But having said that, when we talk about rebalancing, sometimes people will say, well, I don't want to have the taxes. So how does someone balance the idea of rebalancing when they're worried about the tax hit they might take?
That's a good question, and this is kind of an ideal year to look at that because of the volatility we've had in the global markets. And you can look at your portfolio and possibly take some gains, but also offset them with losses across your portfolio as well. And just to note that you can take up to a $3,000 loss, capital loss, on your income tax return against your income if you do have losses to harvest.
Your ordinary income, and we love those kind of losses. I got so excited about talking with you guys, I forgot we have another break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I just want to remind listeners that you can listen to podcasts from prior shows through the website, wdiy.org, by going to local programming and look for Your Financial Choices. And those shows are also posted to yourfinancialchoices.com. I have with me Tim Roof, CFP professional, and Connor Darrell, CFA from Valley National Financial Advisors, who were gracious enough to come tonight to talk to us about the year in review and what's ahead for markets. But more importantly, from my perspective, is they've come to educate our listeners and talk about some of the terms we hear when we're listening to the financial news and trying to understand that there's always another side to this, that we shouldn't get always caught up in the headlines and the breaking news, and trying to put things in perspective and be a little bit disciplined. And in being disciplined, when Connor mentioned about rebalancing your portfolios and maybe getting to more of the risk tolerance that's appropriate for you over the time maybe you hadn't touched your portfolio, or set it and forget it kind of perspective. So rebalancing is important. We also mentioned, Tim, that there could be this, people worry about the tax hit they might take, but if you're doing a rebalance, that might be an opportunity to also take some of the dogs off the plate as well, maybe some of the losses, so you could offset some of them. Now, I would think that another thought that might come to someone is, well, we had a really good day What's today? We had a really good day. Was it last Friday? And Monday was a bad day. How do I know which day to pick if I'm going to rebalance? Maybe they're thinking, do I wait?
I wouldn't really be concerned about what goes on day by day or intraday. It's really about your goals and making sure that you're aligned to meet your goals long term. So, you know, I would take that into perspective when making the change. But it's also good, you know, and as a discipline, though, is, you know, if you do need to rebalance and if the if you feel the economy is bound for recovery, it's better to wait for, you know, the recovery to make that to make those transactions sometimes and rebalance versus doing it at the time when you're near correction territory and the market's down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's certainly when it comes to timing a rebalance, there's certainly some prudence that can be taken and kind of navigating that. But I think the one thing that we would definitely advise against is trying to time the markets in terms of getting in and out, going to cash, getting back invested again. Those are situations where it's basically impossible to really time that out and consistently add value through a strategy like that over time, because technically you have to get the timing decision correct twice. And it's hard enough to get it right once. But, you know, if you time the exit properly, now you have cash and you have to figure out, okay, when do I get back in? And you have to get that correct again as well. So we tend to really advise people to stay the course with that type of approach and not try to be jumping in and out. Plus, you can also end up creating the tax, short-term tax situations if you're in a non-qualified account and you're constantly trading. If you do happen to time one right, now you have a short-term gain, and the tax you pay in the short-term gain might be bigger than the
because
you've been out of the market for so long,
depending on what tax bracket you're in.
And what you frequently see, especially if you're act on emotion, is you end up selling lower and then buying back higher, and then it takes you longer to recover. Mm-hmm. And you know that think about the impact that could have on your compounding growth over time.
And that goes back to how we started this whole conversation tonight about that, the chart with the euphoria. It's like the up and down slopes, right? At the top, the peak, people have euphoria. And then they go down, down, down. And now they're like, oh, gosh, it's going down, down. They get afraid. They can't take it. They get out. They're getting out at the bottom. And then they wait and they watch for it to get, you know, euphoric again, and then they get in. So that's the market timing.
And that's why it's important to understand your ability to take on risk and your risk tolerance and the equation of what that looks like from a return standpoint and helping you meet your goals. And to stay disciplined once you understand what your ideal allocation is and stay diversified as you move forward, because it can help you get through the changing markets on a day-by-day and year-by-year basis.
Because diversification, nothing's typically going the same direction at
right.
the same
time. I'll even add to that. I think the most important thing for an investor to keep in mind when building a portfolio is it's not necessarily about trying to find the portfolio that has the highest maximum expected rate of return over time. It's about finding the portfolio that you know you can tolerate when things get ugly in the market. You can still, you know, sleep it comfortably at night knowing that, you know, that this is the returns you can expect in the portfolio are well within the realm of something you can tolerate, because that's what's going to help you stay invested. And staying invested over the long term is really what generates wealth. It's not you know, timing markets. If you're in an aggressive strategy, it may feel great for 2 years because the returns are great, but then you may find when the market, you know, gets volatile that you can't handle it, and now you're in a situation where you're doing that type of timing behavior that we were talking about that can be so detrimental to missing out on growth opportunities.
Okay. Guys, quick, we just had a call come in. This is really a question I'll handle. Bill from Bethlehem called, and he said, working overtime, they seem to take out more taxes. If you make $100,000 in a year or in a week, does the tax amount differ? Yes, Bill. What happens is your employer looks at the withholding tables provided by the IRS. It's called a circular E, and the withholding tables are broken down in weekly pay, biweekly pay, bimonthly pay, monthly pay, quarterly pay. I think that might be it, maybe just monthly or not sure. And so what happens is if you, for example, your example was $100,000. If I got $100,000 today and I get paid monthly, it is going to assume I'm making, what's 100,000 times 12? A million too.
Yep, 1.2 million.
I can't calculate those big numbers. then they're going to withhold quite a bit of tax versus, you know, if you make $100,000 over the year. So that's why they withhold higher amounts. Typically, when there's bonuses, you'll see employers withhold a flat 25%. So what ends up happening, Bill, though, is just because they've withheld that much does not mean that you're actually going to end up owing that much. When you combine your other income over the year and you take into account any other deductions you might get, you might not owe that much tax, and that's when you get a refund. All right? So just because they've withheld that much doesn't mean that was the tax you actually owed. Just like when people say to me, oh, yeah, they withheld all the taxes. Well, if they only withheld 10% and you're in a 25% tax bracket, that doesn't mean that's all that's due either. So I hope that helped explain it, Bill. And generally, you can work with your payroll department to maybe adjust those withholdings if they withheld too much when you were in overtime pay. Maybe you could have them lower it, you know, at another pay. All right. Folks, or Connor and Tim, we have about 5 minutes left. What do you think it would be important to kind of end the show with talking about?
I think one thing I'd love to add, and it kind of goes into what we were talking about the last 10 minutes or so, is I think this year in particular has been a very difficult year to hold a diversified portfolio. Because aside from United States stocks, pretty much every market in the world, stocks and bonds, has been negative this year. So I think some of that relative comparing the two has become a little bit easier with the pullback we've had recently in the U.S. market. But, you know, back in August or so, when the U.S. market was up 10 or 12% this year and you were looking around the world, nothing else was even close to that. And so if you held a globally diversified portfolio and you're watching, you know, turning on CNBC and you're seeing that the S&P continues to climb higher, it was very hard to, you know, take a look at your diversified portfolio and fully appreciate the benefits of diversification, because your returns were much lower because you happened to hold stocks that were from, you know, Europe, which hasn't performed as well, Japan, which hasn't performed as well, emerging markets, which have been troubled this year. But I think it's important to acknowledge that that's a very rare situation in terms of, you know, this year has been kind of unique in that regard. And the pendulum can easily swing the other way. And that's why, because it's so hard to predict when that pendulum might swing, that's why it's so important to have a diversified portfolio. And as long as we can kind of understand what's driving the returns in our portfolio, it sometimes becomes a little bit easier to stick with the strategy, as long as we understand, you know, why we're doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Tim, do you have anything to add on that?
And from a, you know, that perspective that Connor was stating, that it was a very diverse return spectrum this year, where really the only thing so far that's been up from an equity standpoint are U.S. large cap companies, and mid cap companies are down year to date. Small cap companies are down year to date, and foreign stocks are down year to date. And so overall, just, you know, really stick to your core allocation over time. Don't try to time it, because unfortunately, no one's going to ring the bell to tell you when the right time to switch from U.S. to foreign or foreign to U.S. It's always good to have a diversified allocation across both U.S. and foreign as you move along, because there will be times in the future where foreign does outperform U.S. stocks.
Didn't we have that, like, in the recent years?
2017 was actually the first year where foreign stocks since the U.S. recession outperformed U.S. stocks. But there's been periods in the past, such as the mid-2000s, where foreign stocks outperformed U.S. stocks as well.
And people have a place to go with their cash a little bit more now, too, right? The banks still maybe aren't catching up with some of the higher interest rates.
That's true. It's more tolerable to, you know, hold on to some of your cash. And that's good for savers, because, you know, as rates are starting to creep higher, you know, treasury yields have crept higher as well. So if you're in a situation where you really don't want to take any risk and you have some cash, there are better options for you now than there were 5 years ago, which is good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you guys want to add? We still have another minute or so. You want to just wrap up?
Yeah, well, I think I'll just add, as a final bow on the volatility comment, I think I mentioned it's one of my favorite phrases. I think I said it back in January when we were talking about what we might expect to be higher volatility. But the stock market is the only market on earth where when everything goes on sale, everybody leaves the store. So don't leave the store. Get in on the deals.
I love that, Connor. Well, Connor, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. We'll have you guys back in the next quarter. Tim, Roof, thank you for being here. Tim and I work quite closely together, and I appreciate his thoughtfulness in looking at people's portfolios and kind of coming on and talking about education.
Thank you, Lori, and thanks for having both of us tonight. It was enjoyable.
Yeah, thanks. Folks, if you want to listen to this show again, we expect that it would be posted to the website probably within a week or so. It usually takes several days, but you can catch it on yourfinancialchoices.com or on the website wdiy.org. Again, under local programming and look for Your Financial Choices. Next week, I have Dennis Pappas, attorney Dennis Pappas from Vasiliadis and Pappas, and we're going to talk about special situations in estate planning, including veterans benefits, because Dennis does quite a bit with veterans, and we thought maybe we would touch on some special situations as we've covered some estate planning topics in recent shows, which are also available on the websites. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Shandi for being here, Lori for being here, Tim and Connor, of course, and our listeners. Thank you, and thank you, Bill, for calling in. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.